After having defeated the Joker, Batman now faces the Penguin, a warped and deformed individual who is intent on being accepted into Gotham society. Crooked businessman Max Schreck is coerced into helping the Penguin become mayor of Gotham, and they both attempt to expose Batman in a different light. Meanwhile, Selina Kyle, Max's lowly secretary, is thrown from the top of a building and is transformed into Catwoman, a mysterious figure who has the same personality disorder as Batman. Can Batman defeat two fiendish foes at once and clear his name at the same time? And what must be done with Catwoman? Shout my people, and welcome to our 33rd episode of Happiness and Darkness, the superhero movie podcast, where we cover superhero movies from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, and more. If it came from a comic and had a theatrical release, you know we'll discuss it. Naturally, there will be spoilers, folks, so you have been warned. I'm one of your co-hosts, DJ Nick, and today we'll be discussing Batman Returns. And with me today to discuss this recurrence of Burton's Dark Knight is one of the hosts of the Capes and Lunatics podcast, Phil Perich. Hey, Phil, how are you doing?
Ah, great. It's great to be here. I love the show. I love talking Batman and all comic books. So yeah, this is a great treat.
Oh, well, we're super, super happy to have you with us today, Phil. Well, you know, as you are a first-time guest co-host here on the show, what we usually tend to ask our guest co-hosts is, how did you actually get into comics and what was your gateway into the superhero movie genre?
Well, of course, I mean, I was a big comic book fan before I saw any of the movies, but I mean, it started pretty much early in my life. I watched, like, you know, Super Friends cartoons, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Then I started watching the Transformers cartoon, and that was like my very first comic, was like the Transformers comic that Marvel was putting out. And of course, that wasn't enough, so I was like, what characters I don't know? I know Spider-Man, I know Batman, I know Superman. So I just started, and it just kept expanding outward and outward. And, you know, now I'm 42 and I'm still collecting comics week to week.
Oh, well, that's awesome. It's wonderful, you know, that you are still collecting comics to this day. Right. And, you know, so today we are reviewing Batman Returns from 92, directed by Tim Burton. The story was by Sam Hamm and Daniel Waters, who our listeners might know from Heathers and Vampire Academy. The music was once again by Danny Elfman. It stars Michael Keaton once again as Bruce Wayne Batman, Michael Goth as Alfred Pennyworth, Michelle Pfeiffer as Selina Kyle Catwoman, Christopher Walken as Max Schreck, and Danny DeVito as Oswald Cobblepot, the Penguin. So on estimates, Phil, this film cost around $80 million to make, and it made $266.8 million at the box office. So, not a bad return for this return. Did we enjoy it? We shall see. Well, so when I sent you the list of movies to pick from, Phil, what made you gravitate to Batman Returns?
Well, first of all, I mean, I looked at the list. I mean, I'm a big Marvel and DC fan, but I love the Keaton Batman movies, and I saw the first one was Taken, so I was like, oh, I have to jump on Batman Returns before that one goes too, because, I mean, I like the Christian Bale ones, especially the Dark Knight, but, like, the Michael Keaton ones are, like, my Batman. It's like, you know, I saw the first one when I was, like, 11 years old, and I was, you know, not too long after, like, a year or so after I really got into comics, and I was just like, oh, this is my Batman.
Wow, awesome. Well, yeah, definitely. It was definitely quite a series for sure. It was definitely, you know, a very first start to see actually seeing great on-screen Batman indeed. So actually, before we get to looking at our characters on the board, I did have a little premise to make before we get down to business here, Phil. I had not watched this movie for a very long time, and I must say that as a child like you, I was fascinated in this case with the weird and wondrous world of Burton. Yeah. But seeing this movie in particular with adult eyes, I cannot but say this is a very strange and kooky movie. And for all you comic fans of Batman, this has there's quite a little to do with the comics, aside of course from the characters and the setting. You know, the movie is very much in a world of its own compared to its predecessor from 89. What were your initial thoughts on the latest rewatch that you did?
I just rewatched this morning. It's interesting because usually I'm very tied to the comics. I'm such a purist that, you know, anytime there's any kind of difference in the movie, it's like, oh, I don't know if I like that. But it's just, I love the Burton movies, but again, he does like the grotesque and, you know, the weird, because it's like, you know, in the comics, the Penguin's a normal guy. Here, he's like a, almost like a mutant, you know, he almost deformed, you know, he's got the flippers instead of hands and stuff. He's been living in the sewer. And even the whole Catwoman thing kind of has like a supernatural bent to it, which, again, she was like a, just like a normal person in the comics.
Oh, yes, exactly, very much so. You know, so let's start by looking at our titular character and the man behind the bat, Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne Batman. So let's start with maybe the first, shall we say, the Bruce Wayne part itself. What were your thoughts on the Bruce Wayne that we got on screen?
I always liked in both movies, like, you know, Keaton's Bruce Wayne and Batman, but it was just like, this movie, it started out weird. He's just like, I guess, brooding in a dark room when they put up the bat signal to call Batman.
Yeah, what is with that? I mean, I'm like, the guy's just sitting around in the dark. I mean, I don't know what he's doing in the dark, but I mean, he was just kind of looking dark, sitting in the dark, and suddenly, boom, you know, the light flashes on. He's like, okay, I gotta go. So that was a little bit odd. But other than that, I mean, did you like the you know, you feel this was a Bruce Wayne you could get behind?
Yeah, because I, like I said, I love Keaton's portrayal and everything. I remember, you know, when he was first announced as Batman, people saying, oh, you know Mr. Mom's gonna play Batman and stuff. But I mean, I had it, as young as I was, I wasn't too familiar with Keaton, so maybe my, you know, my perceptions weren't that colored, where it's like, oh, I know him from all this other stuff. But yeah, I love the Keaton Batman. Again, maybe it's the age I came to it too, but yeah, I just love, I think he had the right sense of seriousness, and every so often you throw in a little bit of humor.
No, yes, very much so. I mean, I would say this Bruce Wayne, like you, I agree with you, is an excellent one and very much works. Though, ironically, yeah, I feel we don't see as much of him as Bruce in this film compared to the first one, as it seems like the lines between Bruce and Batman are very much blurred. As in, it seems to me almost that Hamm and Waters wanted to depict more of a psychological fetish, you know, a man who wants to dress up as a bat to defend the people of Gotham, possibly less of wanting to be a symbol of fear in this case, more almost that he just wants to dress up. That was kind of the vibe I got. I mean, he does carry off the veneer of the kind-hearted and generous billionaire very well, but his Batman is rather odd in many aspects. I mean, you being familiar with the comics, do you like the actual Batman that we got?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, like, especially the modern comics, like, it's like he is Batman, and all Bruce Wayne a lot of times is just the disguise, you know. It's always like, oh, when his parents died, he became the Batman, and Bruce Wayne just became this mask and this tool for him to use. Which, again, I think Keaton pulled off good in these movies, but it's like, I think we got less Bruce Wayne in this movie because I think we got less Batman in this movie. I mean, of course, definitely way less Bruce Wayne than Batman, but I mean, I think it's just because we got two villains this time, maybe. So yeah, Batman got way less screen time.
I will agree with you. It seems to be more about the villains than Batman himself. As also, what I thought was a bit, you know, being a kind of a comics book purist like you, but I will tend to let things slide here and there. You know, the core of the character is the fact that he doesn't kill. And yeah, in this film, you know, the violence is super amped up, you know, as even Batman himself does kill members of the Red Triangle gang. And what I did like is that we got more glimpses of the introverted yet brilliant mind that Bruce possesses, especially when we see him research the Penguin in the Red Triangle gang. And this might actually be the closest of Batman's detective side we have ever gotten on film. As, you know, they didn't really do it much with Christian Bale, and they didn't do it with you know, Clooney or Kilmer. Though there are a few things I was wondering about, though. You know, Batman is a great good detective. And so I thought, it's wonderful about this. I never understood why the side of him being a great detective is so downplayed in other films. I mean, you know, you, like I said before, being familiar with it, would you like to see maybe more of the detective side of Batman in films?
Oh, yeah. If there's one complaint I have about any live action or all the live action Batmans, it's they don't play up his detective side as much, or like his genius. It's basically, it's hit, you know, it's a guy in a mask hitting people.
Oh yes, and also what I, another thing that is odd, which was a little bit kooky about this, was I thought it was kind of funny that kind of like the 60s show, we get some very weird things, like we have a bat CD player, and so we know that Batman knows how to scratch, so I guess he could make for a good DJ, which was a little bit odd, but it wasn't of course as bad as the bat credit card. I mean, this was okay, we'll go with the bat CD player, but I guess he just wants to trademark everything, even if only he and Alfred are the only ones to see these things. But I thought the bat CD player was a little bit odd, but other than that, the character was definitely fun to watch, though I did have gripes with the fact that he does kill and some of the silly comedy moments where he's fighting Catwoman and then he goes all apologetic for striking her during their first fight. Is I understand they may want to give Batman a more gentlemanly side, but it's not like Batman to fall for a trick like that.
Yeah, I don't know if that was just like because they're setting up like almost like a romance between those two. But I mean, you were talking about this 60, you know, some of the 60s vibes in this. I thought you were going to go with the 60 vibe. You know, some days you can't get rid of a bomb because, yeah, he actually, I mean, he takes that bomb and straps it to that one Red Triangle gang member and pushes him, you know, what, down a sewer grate or something. And Batman just blew a guy up. Okay.
And, you know, and then we have also the Fire Eater who gets incinerated by the Batmobile. I mean, sometimes seems a little bit slapsticky, you know? I mean, I guess could work, you know, because after all, we are dealing with Burton and, you know, I suppose Hammond Waters. So there is almost some like a little bit of very slapstick style of comedy, which I guess, you know, for the most part does work, but it does leave a little bit of a sour taste in the mouth. But, you know, all in all, I think we enjoyed this Batman. And of course, you know, as I've often said on this podcast, you can't have Batman without Alfred. Once again, here played by Michael Goth. And in my opinion, one of the definite highlights of these early Batman movies. You know, I'm sure, have seen many versions of Alfred, both in movies, TV and what have you. Did you like this version of Alfred?
Oh, yeah. Again, I don't know if it's just the nostalgia talking, but yeah, he's probably my favorite Alfred. I mean, I've seen all the live action Alfreds. He's probably my favorite. Like I said, maybe just because he came into my life at such a young age and stuff. So I was just like, you know, this is my Alfred.
Oh, well, that, certainly. And compared to the first film, you know, I think we get to see more of the sarcasm and lighter side of Alfred. I mean, I very much enjoy the relationship between him and Bruce and how much Alfred indulges Bruce in all his hero escapades. Did you feel that the Keaton and Gotha relationship worked?
Oh, yeah. The sarcasm, and you could tell, you know, that Alfred cares about Bruce. But, some of the best quotes are from Alfred in these movies, yeah.
Oh, yes. I mean, also, his wit and humor always put a smile on my face. And one of my favorite scenes in this sense, you talk about the great humor, is when both Selina and Bruce have to leave for their independent costume capers. And, of course, Alfred is caught in the crossfire, as is often the case. And he comes to the rescue of our two lovebirds with the brilliance and British irony. So definitely, I will second your opinion. One of the best Alfreds when it comes to Batman on screen, for sure. And naturally, though Bruce has had numerous women in his life, one relationship that I think fans often go back to, which is probably Batman's ultimate paramour, Selina Kyle, Catwoman, played, of course, in this case by Michelle Pfeiffer. Now, what did you think of this particular Catwoman?
Like I said, I like this Catwoman. I'm such a comic book purist that, you know, when they introduce, you know, the whole supernatural element of like her, you know, getting pushed out the window and hitting the ground, and it's like all the cats come over and start biting her, and I guess it's supposed to be implied that they resurrect her or something. I mean, now I found that weird in the Nine Lives thing, but I'm just like, I almost would have liked it better, I think, if it just, they would have had her survive the fall, don't like imply any supernatural element, and then just have her, you know, come home, she's traumatized, and, you know, she makes the costume and everything like she's doing. But it's just like, you know, she's coming after, you know, Max Schreck just because, you know, she's been victimized by this guy. Not, you know, there's no supernatural element to this.
Exactly, yes, good. Because, you know, for our listeners who don't know, Catwoman does not have any kind of supernatural origin. She actually rather has very humble origins, which I will get to here shortly. But first off, I did want to take my hat off to Michelle for her dedication to the role. You know, taking kickboxing lessons and learning to handle a whip, which is, of course, Catwoman's weapon of choice. though apparently she ended up cutting her teacher's chin during a lesson. And those and whips are definitely not, you know, it's not pleasant to get a whip on any part of your body, folks. Definitely not fun. And like I mentioned before, I don't know whether you know, the writers were consuming hallucinogenic substances in the writer's room when it came to some of the characters. But like you said, this Catwoman is very weird in certain aspects. You know, you mentioned the origin. I still to this day, Phil, cannot understand how in the world they got this. You know, I get it. They wanted to make her more like a cat, you know, the nine lives and everything. But, you know, the resurrection stuff was just, I don't know, I agree, it was just so weird. And I don't know, do you think it was a little bit out of place, the fact they made her so cat-like? I you know, drinking the milk from the, you know, loving milk and, you know, washing herself and stuff. I mean, did that work for you?
I mean, I get what they were trying to do if they wanted to do that. I just think instead of going the whole supernatural thing, they could have just, like, said she had, like, a psychotic break or something.
Hmm. Yeah, because I think that was what kind of is implied, I suppose, but it just is very, very strange. And, you know, as I actually did touch up on during a review of The Dark Knight Rises, Selina Kyle's main origin stories are either, you know, she's an actual cat burglar, or in more modern iterations, she was actually a prostitute who learned how to fight, you know, to be rid of her pimp and steal in order to make ends meet, hence the cat costume, which is actually intended for a client of hers. I mean, do you think it would have worked maybe in, you know, the early 90s to have had maybe a almost a redemption story of a prostitute becoming an anti-hero slash, you know, almost heroic kind of character?
I mean, it could have worked. I would have been here for that. But I mean, this whole movie was just so weird because, I mean, they were marketing this movie to kids. I mean, toys. McDonald's had Happy Meal toys for this movie. I mean, meanwhile, like we said, people were getting killed. I mean, Penguin was like sexually harassing everyone. It was just a weird mix, you know.
Exactly, very much so. I mean, I really do find it very strange, and hence I refer to Lord knows what Hammond Waters were thinking when they come up this. You know, she looks amazing in her costume, don't get me wrong, and I get she wants to be the femme fatale, but to be honest, I don't understand why they made her crazy. You know, I suppose obviously being thrown out of a window will do that to you and may have caused serious concussion. But sometimes I think in an attempt to make her edgy, they went slightly over the top with the crazy moments. And another big problem I had with this film, which is, you know, is quite present throughout, is the overtly sexual innuendos, which will feature heavily, at least on when it comes to Penguin. You know, the groping scene with Batman on the rooftop and the semi-hard remark that she makes to the party was, I think, a bit much. And, you know, and like you said, in no way was it kid-friendly. You know, I understand that the driving force is revenge against Max Schreck, and I suppose in her own twisted way, she wants to defend women who are victims to criminals, but she does it in a very twisted way. And I guess the assumption to us viewers might be, this woman is just completely yo-yo. But I mean, what did you think of, you know, the sexual jokes, maybe the over-sexualization of maybe in the character of Catwoman?
I mean, again, like I said, it was weird that they were marketing this to kids. What was this, 1992? I was like 14, so I was just I was like, oh, okay, I get that. Oh, I see what they did. I just said, I get what they said. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate that they may want to give this character almost a tragic story because, you know, she's always seeming to want to find herself. And then, you know, she's constantly mistreated by men and you do feel bad for her. And I think for the most part, Michelle Pfeiffer does deserve the praise that she got for this role. But the origin story, a little problematic for me. And so we touched up on the object of Selina's crusade of vengeance and certainly not a nice guy by any stretch of the imagination, Christopher Walken as Max Schreck, who, listeners, is actually a completely invented character for the movie. He was actually created by Daniel Waters and is a tribute to German actor Max Schreck, who starred in Nosferatu, which was Murnau's 1922 vampire film. Apart from that, you know, Schreck fulfills what would have been Harvey Dent's role if Billy Dee Williams had opted out of this film. And apparently, singer David Bowie was previously considered to play the Joker in the first film and was in the contention for the role of Schreck. Could you have seen David Bowie doing what Christopher Walken did on screen?
I don't know if I could see that. And like I was saying, like I said, there was two villains. There's three villains. That's why Batman gets less screen time, because we have three villains. We have this original villain, Max Schreck, who's basically just Christopher Walken being Christopher Walken, in my opinion.
Are you a fan of Christopher Walken's?
Oh yeah, I love when he plays like the evil like SOB and stuff. Oh yeah, you know, just chewing scenery and.
Oh yeah, that's definitely Christopher Walken to a T. And apparently, according to the casting director, Burton was initially hesitant to cast Walken as Shrek on the basis that the actor scared him. Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose it can be kind of scary. So, for being a completely original character, did you like Max Shrek?
I mean, yeah, I liked him. Like I said, I like Walken when he plays roles like this. And, I mean, Batman's always had, like, you know, figures like this in the comics and elsewhere. You know, just either, you know, corrupt businessmen or crime bosses. I mean, it's not that far out of left field for Batman.
No, I will agree with you, yeah, because he does often have to deal with mob bosses and corrupt businessmen indeed. And I'm actually, like you, I'm a big fan of Christopher Walken. I've enjoyed everything he's been in, though I will be the first to admit, like you, Phil, that he pretty much plays himself in every single movie he's appeared in. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but... But yeah, it's always Christopher Walken. Though I was a little bit confused about his initial plan of wanting to build a power chemical plant in order to hog energy and resell it to Gotham City. I mean, could you kind of make head or tail about this kind of weird plan of his?
Yeah, it's very weird. Yeah, I was like, it seems like he's going to create electricity for the city, but he's going to hoard it, so they have to pay him extra money. Yeah, it's kind of weird, but then... And then to get this whole thing pushed through, he's going to make Penguin mayor?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, if that works for him. I mean, I suppose they could have just made him almost evil for evil's sake, but, I guess they wanted to give him something. Yeah. But outside this odd plan, he is very every bit your stereotypical, slimy, odious businessman who's out for profit regardless of consequences to others. And we actually learn from Penguin that aside from poisoning the planet with his chemical waste, Selina is actually not his first victim, and he'll do away with anybody within his company who either gets too close, like in Selina's case, or he may have a falling out, like his old partner whose hand resurfaces in Penguin's mystery bag. Definitely not a bag I'd like to get on my doorstep. I thought he was actually my favorite villain of the three we got on screen. He made me think of almost a Mr. Burns-like character, just how menacing and creepy he is all the way to the end. So, I think he was definitely a good addition to this. Would you have liked to have seen future iterations of Max Shrek in other films?
Maybe, yeah, because, yeah, he was very, like you said, he might have been, well, Penguin was pretty evil, but, I mean, he was probably one of the most evil people. I mean, he reminded me more of, Jack Nicholson's Joker more than any of the other villains. But yeah, I would love to see him again. But other than his evil plan, the thing I didn't get was when he pushes Selina out the window, it's like, okay, you pushed her right out your own office window. So had you killed her, her dead body would be flying several floors down right above your broken window.
Yes, so exactly. People would start to talk. I mean, I wonder whether he has, a team of people who kind of, dispose of bodies and what have you. And also, he has a very curious relationship with his son, Chip, who yeah. I thought was kudos to the actor, indeed, because he is very much a junior Christopher Walken, if such a thing is possible. But what do you think of the relationship between, Max and Chip?
It's so funny. It does smack of old money and, these corrupt millionaires or billionaires. Yeah, I just love the scene in the beginning, when the Red Triangle Gang comes for Max and Chip jumps in front of him and says, "You're gonna have to go through me," and they're all pulling up their knives and guns like, ooh.
Well, definitely. And before we actually get to the big villain, or should we say one of the last of the three, what, speaking of the Red Triangle Gang, did you like the whole concept that this is, rogue circus crew that kind of apparently kidnaps children and what have you? And did you like that whole sort of circus idea, which then gave us the Penguin?
I mean, I liked it. I mean, it does smack of me of stuff from Batman comics and other things. I get it. I liked it. I don't know if I liked that Penguin came from this world, but I did like the idea of the Red Triangle Gang itself.
Yeah, so I suppose you had to have goons for Batman to fight aside from, obviously our three main villains. typical, I mean, this was once again, I think, very reminiscent of the 60s, where you'd have your main villain and he'd have, you know, his goons, and Batman would fight the goons, and then, you know, you take on, you know, the main boss, as almost as if it were a video game. So I suppose they had to give Penguin some goons, as I suppose. And so we do come ostensibly to the villain that a lot of folks had problems with, Danny DeVito as Oswald Cobblepot the Penguin. Now, you actually mentioned right there at the top of this, of the episode, that you know, the Penguin is not exactly like this. And having that idea in mind, the fact they made him into this almost deformed character and literally made him look like a penguin, did that bother you at all?
I get it for the movie, but it kind of took me out of it even when I first saw it, just because the Penguin is like one of the more normal Batman villains, because he's a normal person. He doesn't even have like the mental issues most of the time in most iterations that the other villains have, because like usually when Batman captures him, he doesn't go to Arkham. He goes to the regular Blackgate prison or whatever. He's just, you know, he's a normal guy. Back in the day, he had, you know, trick umbrellas and stuff, but like the more modern interpretations, he's been like a crime boss. You know, he sits in an iceberg lounge and basically just runs things from behind the scenes.
In fact, it's more akin to the beauty, I think, of the Batman's rogues gallery is a lot of the villains are almost the reverse of what Bruce could have been had he gone the wrong, you know, the bad way, because Penguin, I guess, almost reminds, it could be a reminder of what Batman could have been like, or Bruce could have been like, had he decided to be a crime lord himself, because we find out, obviously, in the comics, Penguin comes from old money himself, and is, you know, the Cobblepots are a wealthy family and what have you, so it mirrors more the Bruce Wayne character. You know, I thought, funny enough, you know, DeVito was suggested for the role by Jack Nicholson after the financial success of the film. And so Jack was like, come on, buddy, you have to get on this cash cow and stuff. So I suppose that's why Danny took the role. I mean, my first thought was he's an exaggerated and darker version of the Penguin we'd seen in the Batman 66 TV show, where, you know, you had Burgess Meredith who played him. And funnily enough, Burgess was actually asked to play Tucker Cobblepot. He was, you know, Oswald's father, whom we see at the beginning of the film, but due to health issues, he had to decline, and that part was played by Paul Rubens. Yes, folks, Pee-wee Herman is Penguin's father. And he actually reprised that role in the TV show Gotham, so a nice continuity there. But speaking of his son, Oswald, well, like you, Phil, they just transformed him into a completely Burton-esque character. For those who know the comics, or even just seen the Batman animated series, like Phil was saying, Penguin is an evil and devious individual, but he's a man of wealth and taste, and at the same time, rather erudite. And rather than actually being deformed, he just gets his name because he's a portly gentleman dressed in black and white and resembles a penguin because of his portly figure and beak-like nose. And also, obviously, you have his obsession with birds. But I understand they wanted to make him a deformed character who ends up leading the Red Triangle gang. It was just very, very, once again, strange. And the terrible sexual jokes, Phil. They are just cringeworthy. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand why they had to make him into such a lecherous monster. I mean, how can, you know what? Because if you want to feel sympathy for this character, how can we feel sympathy for this guy, you know?
I think they wanted you to feel sympathy in the beginning, because it's like, oh, he, you know, when he lies and says he doesn't know who his parents are and stuff, and he's been in the sewers whole life. But then I think they quickly wanted you to see, oh yeah, this man is a bad man, a very bad man.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the sexual jokes were a little bit over the top. Some of them, I think, were just way too out there. And once again, this is a film that children were supposed to go see. And I mean, I can only imagine, you know, taking a kid to the movies to see this, and they're spouting out these incredibly, you know, very sexual jokes in the playground and stuff. I'm like, okay, this probably could have ruined a lot of people's childhoods.
Oh, especially when he comes upstairs and he sees Catwoman laying there on the bed, what he utters. Yeah, I think that's the most blatant thing.
Exactly, but there's that one. There's the French flipper trick.
the button on the one girl. Yeah,
yeah. It's pretty bad in that sense, I would say. But you know, that the only thing I felt was, because Burton, almost in a lot of films, he wants us almost to feel sympathy for his creatures. You know, you think of Edward Scissorhands, you think of maybe even Jack Skellington, you think of even, well, I suppose Beetlejuice, you can't really feel sympathy for Beetlejuice. But he always tries to give his characters some sort of charm. Yeah. Whereas Penguin, he's just like so disgusting and so oily and so awful. It's just, but what I thought though was fascinating was the fact they wanted to give biblical origins to the character. Because, you know, he's first, it's almost like Moses in the origin story where he's being, you know, floated down the sewer. And then I think it's no coincidence that, you know, he comes into his own 33 years later, like the age of Jesus before he was crucified. So I thought that was an interesting take. So all in all, you know, I think Danny DeVito did a great job, but I'm mainly unhappy with the way Waters and Hamm wrote him. So would you say that this was not a Penguin that you would like to see again?
Like I said, I really didn't like, you know, the deformed, you know, man monster. I like a more pure Penguin, like a regular person. But I don't know if maybe Burton was trying to go for something different, because I mean, the first Batman was pretty much more grounded in reality. Yeah, I mean, you got the Joker, but it was basically just like a criminal who got dunked in the chemicals and got his skin and hair bleached. That was it. Everything else was, you know, I mean, yeah, there were some weird, some, you know, movie tropes in there, but I mean, the first movie was pretty grounded in reality. This one, you're getting, you know, half man, half penguins. You're getting women resurrected by cats. Yeah, I mean, this one was way further out there.
It was definitely very further afield indeed. I think here they gave Burton and the writers way more control than they had possibly in the first Batman film. So, and you know, and bearing this in mind, now that we, you know, we will be getting a new Penguin and a new Catwoman in the upcoming The Batman film, we, you know, so we'll be having Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman and we'll be having Colin Farrell as Penguin. What are you hoping to see with this new iterations of Catwoman and Penguin?
Well, with me, it's always like, how close can you get to the comic book, which you should, with these characters, be able to get pretty close, just because, like I said, in the comics, they are regular people. I mean, they might have like weird costumes or fancy weaponry, but they're normal people. You know, there's no special effects really, besides like a whip or a trick umbrella that you really need for these characters.
So you're hoping, for example, that Colin Farrell's Penguin will be more of the kind of portly businessman rather than whatever it is we got here.
I mean, yeah, not as much as what we got here, but I mean, he could either be, you know, the businessman, the behind the scenes guy, or even if he gets closer to a Burgess Meredith Penguin. Either way, I mean, they're both normal people. I would welcome any of those versions.
And when it comes to Catwoman, would you like to see something akin to this, or would you like to see maybe something more like what we got with Anne Hathaway?
Probably more what we saw with Anne Hathaway, but maybe like flesh out the background of the character more, you know. No natural, maybe show her as like, you know, she grew up an orphan or whatever, and like you were saying, either go the prostitute route or have her, you know, stealing the survival on the streets.
I think so too, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see what we will get in this next Batman iteration. But going back to this film, Phil, any final thoughts on the movie before we move forward?
I'm trying to think. Probably no. Just like I said, as you know, as much as some of this stuff took me out of it, I did enjoy this movie. I love the Michael Keaton Batman movies, and they always hold a special place for me.
I would think that definitely makes two of us, because, of course, you know, they did launch an era of their own, you know, with Batman. I think they kind of brought back the dark and gritty Batman that many of us loved. And at the end of the day, I suppose it did kind of spawn the animated TV series, which is so well loved and is definitely a masterpiece. So I think if any of the good things that did definitely came out of these two films was, you know, that animated TV show. And I think a refound interest in the Batman character indeed. So let's get to ratings here, Phil. Where does this movie rate for you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Like I said, I don't know if it's the nostalgia talking. I mean, there's the little nitpicks, you know, the character details, like the Penguin and Catwoman and stuff. But I mean, I still probably got to give this, again, maybe it's nostalgia talking, but I'd probably give this an 8 out of 10.
Well, that's very generous on your part. I'm you know, I guess I didn't really enjoy my rewatch as much as I had in the past. I'm going to give this a 6 out of 10, as unfortunately in my case, I have more problems with this movie than love for it growing up. I mean, I loved it as a kid, But as an adult, it's starting to lose its power on me, which is sad, I guess. But sometimes they say, you know, you shouldn't go and rewatch films that you enjoyed as a child because you end up poking holes in it. But but other than that, you know, my big problems were the sexual jokes and penguins all around nastiness. It just got the better of me. Also, the fact that making Catwoman crazy, I found it was difficult times to get my head around. But the saving graces, I think, were definitely Alfred, Bruce, and Max Schreck. And that's saying a lot. But I definitely enjoyed these three indeed. And obviously, Keaton will always be in my heart when it comes to the on-screen versions of Batman. So let's get to reading recommendations here, Phil. Did you have any stories you would like to suggest to our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for, well, first, Catwoman stories, I think some of the more current stuff, I mean, she's had a couple ongoing series which have been pretty good, but like the last few years Tom King was writing Batman, and he was doing a lot of good stuff with the Bruce and Selina relationship. I mean, they almost got married like 2 years back. They're still together, and like James Tynan IV is writing it now, and I think he's doing a pretty good job of like really showing Selina as like a partner for Bruce and Batman.
Oh, very well said. And this character has definitely come a long way. Oh. I was going to suggest, when it comes to Catwoman, I'm going to go back a little bit further. I was going to suggest Her Sister's Keeper from 1989, which is by Mindy Newell and art by J.J. Birch. To give you guys a rundown, when a criminal associate assaults young streetwalker Selina Kyle, she learns how to defend herself and also learns that murder comes easily. She discovers she is destined to be the Catwoman, and this is a great origin story to how Selina became Catwoman. It's possibly the closest version in the comics to Michelle's version of the character. Also, for those who want to read more about the Penguin, I would suggest Pain and Prejudice from 2012 by Greg Hurwitz and Simon Quadransky. Here you will learn how young Oswald Cobblepot went from being the apple of his mother's eye to the leader of underworld gangs and the adversary of the Caped Crusader. And that's Penguin, Pain, and Prejudice. So, Phil, we selflessly promoted stories. Let's get to shameless self-promotion. When it comes to you and what you do, where can our fine listeners find you on the interwebs? And give us an idea of what you do in podcast land.
Well, actually, I co-host two podcasts, The Capes and Lunatics and The Capes and Lunatics Sidekicks. The Capes and Lunatics, we talk a lot of current events like the new comics, TV, movies, and stuff. On Sidekicks, we usually talk like older stuff. Like right now, we're covering Batman Nightfall, issue by issue. And then we also have Ultimate Spider-Cast. We cover a bunch of Spider-Man stuff. We cover Deadpool stuff. We have a show where we just pick whatever old comic and we cover that. And we even do, a lot of people may not know that there's a Marvel character called Quasar. We cover that also, like all his appearances. So, I mean, if you're a fan of superheroes in general, I mean, just come on over. I mean, we're all over the place, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Well, I definitely will endorse that. Be sure to check out Phil and the amazing things that he does. And if you want to be like Phil and join us here on the show to discuss a movie of your choice, feel free to shoot us an email at happinessanddarknesshow@gmail.com. We also really appreciate your thoughts and feedback about the show. You can reach out to us at those also at happinessanddarknesshow@gmail.com, and we'll read them out here on the show. Feel free to show your support by giving us a like on Facebook, where you'll find us as Happiness and Darkness. You can also follow us on Twitter, where we're at High Darkness Pod, or on Instagram under Hin Darkness. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast, the feeling generous, you can hit the donate button on soundcloud.com/whiskeyandcigarettes, or become patrons of ours on Patreon. That's patreon.com/happinessindarkness. We really appreciate that. Any donators will be able to pick the movie we next discuss, even pick one of the recurring co-hosts we discuss it with, or come on the show themselves to discuss the movie of their choice. Also, as always, want to thank our video maker, David Moreno, the mad scientist behind all the great episode trailers you can find on our Facebook page. Be sure to subscribe to his nostalgia channel on YouTube. The man does great work. And speaking of things to come, next week we'll be joined by Charlie Esser to discuss the 1983 Richard Lester film, Superman 3. That's well, I can hear you smirk there, Phil. And, I also believe that you and Charlie are friends.
Oh, yes. Well, he's also on the Capes and Lunatics. Yes. So I was going to say, I think I've heard of that man. Yes. Charlie Esser's my co-host. And yes, he's a big Superman 3 defender. That's his favorite Superman movie. So you're in for quite a conversation on that one.
Well, we definitely look forward to it. That said, when it comes to you, Phil, once again, I look forward to having you back here on Happiness and Darkness. I certainly thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me. And yes, I definitely have to come back. Like I said, I'm a Marvel and DC fan, so we'll have to talk some Marvel next time.
We definitely will. Well, folks, thanks as always for listening to the show and supporting us. We will see you next week with Charlie Esser and Superman 3. Until then, stay super. Ciao, my people.